Welcome back for the second hour of Issues Etc. Two short conversations ahead. The first with Pastor Mark Chavez of Word Alone Network. We'll be talking with him about the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. Two congregations up in Minnesota that had some sanctions imposed and then lifted for various reasons. We'll be talking about, well, we've talked about her before, Anita C. Hill. She was a pastor that was an active lesbian pastor who was ordained in an Evangelical Lutheran Church in America congregation, St. Paul Reformation Church in St. Paul, Minnesota. Her ordination is not considered valid by the ELCA. We'll find out about her. A little later in the hour, we'll be talking with Christina Mueller, Deputy Director of Legislative Outreach for the Susan B. Anthony List, based in Alexandria, Virginia. We'll talk to her about pro-life women. Open Lines is the remainder of the program. We'll hear from the president as he addressed pro-life demonstrators yesterday. He addressed the demonstrators on the Mall of Washington, D.C. via telephone from here in St. Louis. We'll find out what he had to say. We'll get your reaction, your questions, and your comments. Pastor Mark Chavez, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
Tell us the story, first of all, about Anita C. Hill, the pastor of St. Paul Reformation Church there in St. Paul, Minnesota.
Well, she had been a member and on staff and serving in that congregation for several years, and the St. Paul Synod in their assembly a couple of years ago had asked for an exception to the ELCA policies, and that request for an exception was turned down, so the congregation went ahead and ordained her in April of 2001, and that then prompted the current bishop at the time of the St. Paul Area Synod, Bishop Mark Hansen, to discipline the congregation and censure them for doing that and imposing some sanctions upon the congregation.
Is it true that Anita C. Hill is openly gay?
Yes.
Was that the reason the exception was refused by Bishop Hansen at the time?
Actually, it was a formal request to a churchwide assembly of the ELCA to approve the exception, and it was turned down. And yes, the exception would have been an exception to the current policy of the ELCA that says, from their vision and expectations document, ordained ministers who are homosexual in their self-understanding are expected to abstain from homosexual sexual relationships. And she had publicly said that she was in a committed same-sex relationship, and everyone knew that. And that was the exception that they had requested.
So her ordination is still not recognized by the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America?
That's correct.
Now, why were the sanctions lifted this week?
For several reasons, according to the new bishop of the St. Paul Area Synod, Bishop Peter Rognes, one is that at the Synod Assembly of the St. Paul Area Synod last spring, the Synod passed a resolution requesting the bishop to lift the sanctions against St. Paul Reformation. So he had been asked already by the Synod and Assembly to do that. And in his announcement, he also cites the effective ministry that St. Paul Reformation has done in the St. Paul area, and especially reaching out to gays and lesbians in the community.
What did the sanctions imposed mean for St. Paul Reformation Church there in St. Paul, and what does the lifting now mean for that congregation?
Well, there were two parts to the discipline taken against them. One was a kind of public censure or admonition, and that actually still remains in effect. But for a congregation who is publicly censured, the specific sanctions include members from that congregation, including any pastors on their staff, from serving on the Synod Council or conference officers, such as a conference dean or any leadership team, board, committee, or task force of the St. Paul Area Synod. And presumably they wouldn't be eligible to serve on any churchwide committees and so forth.
And with the lifting, this does not mean that there has been an approval of Pastor Hill's ordination?
Right. Bishop Rognes was clear in saying that this doesn't in any way affect the standards of the ELCA or in any way give approval to what they've done by ordaining someone who is in a same-sex relationship.
So where does it stand then? It seems, at least in my mind, somewhat unresolved. They are still being served by an openly lesbian pastor. The church has not approved this, and yet the sanctions have been lifted. The censure remains. What's next?
Well, I'm sure that St. Paul Reformation is hoping that the ELCA will eventually change its current standards so that people who are in a same-sex relationship can be ordained and serve on the clergy roster, and furthermore, that the ELCA will formally approve of the blessing of same-sex unions.
And what do you think the chances for that are?
Well, there's a lot of organized force and energy to convince us in the ELCA that we ought to move in those directions. I myself am optimistic that the ELCA will not make those changes in 2005.
I got a note on this from someone who said, now it's official, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America is approving of openly gay clergy. De facto approval, but approval nonetheless. How do you respond to that?
I guess I would just respond by describing what has been the situation in our church for several years now. And what has evolved is basically a system of feudal lords, in the sense that each synodical bishop is roughly equivalent to a feudal lord, and they can do pretty much what they want to do within their own synod, and especially with regard to the standards that we have for ordained pastors. It's been public knowledge now for several years that, and this is a statistic from the people in favor of making these changes in our standards, that over 35, or at least 35, pastors of the ELCA on the roster are in a same-sex relationship. And the bishops in those synods most likely know that and have chosen not to do anything about it. So there's we certainly haven't as a national church or as a denomination approved of any change in our standards, and yet the reality is that depending on which synod you're in and depending on who your bishop is, there can be several violations of the standards.
So it sounds as though the dilemma facing the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America on this and other issues is also an organizational problem, in that each bishop can pretty much do as he wants, and he's not accountable to anyone to speak of.
Right. If the procedure would be that a synodical bishop, if they're not enforcing the standards of the ELCA, then it would be up to the presiding bishop of the ELCA to take some action. But that has never happened, and it's unlikely to happen. And the curious thing about what's going on is that on the one hand, and especially with Call to Common Mission, the full communion agreement that we approved with the Episcopal Church USA, there's rather intense pressure in a lot of areas to have complete conformity to only one way of doing ordinations. And yet, on the other hand, there's this other tension and pressure to allow for people to do whatever they want.
When is the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America's report on human sexuality expected to be released? I heard there's one coming up.
Well, the task force is to give a preliminary report at the churchwide assembly in Milwaukee this summer, and then they're supposed to make recommendations leading into the 2005 churchwide assembly. And according to the timeline that our 2001 churchwide assembly approved, there would be a formal vote in 2005 whether or not to ordain practicing homosexuals and also to bless same-sex unions. And then in 2007, the task force was to present a new statement on human sexuality.
What do you think will be the take on in that report on the issue of homosexuality, but in particular on the ordination of active homosexuals and same-sex unions?
A lot of people are saying that it's a done deal and that the task force is completely stacked in one direction. And I think that it's probably too early to say how the task force will report. I think there's been, unlike the first round of the attempt to get us to make all of these changes back in the early 1990s when the task force was almost completely stacked, 16 to 1, in favor of the revisionist proposals. It's not quite as out of balance this time. There are some good, strong people on the task force who will support the current standards of the ELCA and resist these changes. And I think the other reality is that more and more people within our church are informing both our national leadership but also the bishops of the synods that if the ELCA were to proceed with these changes and make the changes, that it would badly divide the church and do a lot of damage for the ELCA and its ability to do mission.
Pastor Chavez, how did the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America get to this point?
Well, right from the start, it's been my perception that the gay and lesbian activists were well organized and well prepared to take advantage of the merger, the formation of the ELCA in 1988. And you probably know in your conversations with leaders from the other mainline denominations and you know just from anybody within our society and culture that there has been a very well organized gay and lesbian movement in all areas of society and culture to convince us that we ought to change our views of same-sex relationships. And it's quite clear that with the formation of the ELCA in 1988, that those people who favor the revisionist proposals were well organized and managed to either get elected or get appointed, and especially at the churchwide offices in Chicago, key people who supported that agenda and have pushed it from day one. I mean, how else could you explain that a task force appointed by our churchwide leadership in 1990 would have 16 people in favor of a proposal that ended up being rejected by 90% of the congregations who looked at it, 90% of the individuals, and two-thirds of the pastors? They were just completely out of step with the rest of the membership of our church.
What would you say to someone, Pastor, who's listening, who belongs to a conservative church body, perhaps even my conservative church body, the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, who says what's happening in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America could never happen in my denomination?
I'd say open up your eyes and be realistic about how well organized and how powerful the effort has been to convince all Americans to change their views on homosexuality and homosexual relationships. No church body has been immune from this pressure, even a church body like the Roman Catholic tradition. And the other thing that I would say is that we as Christians who truly believe that God's word is authoritative for us in everything that we say and do and teach and how we live, we need to reach out in a much more intentional way to people who are caught up in homosexual relationships and bring the gospel to them and try and minister to them. There are wonderful therapists and Christian ministries all across the country who can serve these people. And unfortunately, too often, the conservative churches in America have just issued flat-out statements saying that homosexuality is wrong, and have not taken the extra step of actually trying to minister to people.
Pastor Mark Chavez, thank you very much for being our guest on Issues Etc.
You're welcome, Todd.
Pastor Mark Chavez is director of a renewal group in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America called Word Alone Network, based in New Brighton, Minnesota. Now, folks, if you are one of those lay people in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America who thinks maybe you're the last one and you wonder what's happening to your church, you need to contact this organization, Word Alone Network. Here's the phone number. It's toll-free, 1-888-551-7254. That's 1-888-551-7254. They also have a website, wordalone.org, wordalone.org. Going into the bottom of the hour, we're going to have a conversation here with Christina Mueller, and we're going to talk about pro-life women. Is it true that women are more pro-life than they have been before, especially here 30 years after Roe v. Wade? The general population seems to be trending more toward, well, a leaning toward pro-life. What about women? That's really the crucial question here. It's because women are the ones who have abortions. Christina Mueller is Deputy Director of Legislative Outreach for the Susan B. Anthony List, based in Alexandria, Virginia. Christina, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you. Hello.
What are you seeing by way of a trend with regard to women's view on the life issue?
Well, actually, it's really about education. And from what I understand, you do play our one-minute commentaries, and it's programs like that that are exposing partial birth abortion and, you know, the differences between the life of the mother and, say, a partial birth abortion, which is a common form of abortion, and the horrors of that. What we're trying to do is educate women to the horrors of abortion and what it does to a woman. And I think through that education, women are recognizing that Roe versus Wade allowed any abortion at any time and for any reason, and women are more likely now to say, well, wait, we want to put some restrictions on abortion. We don't support abortion at any time for any reason in the pregnancy. So I think it's about educating the women that they can say, you know, I think abortion should be illegal except for in the case of rape and incest. So now polls are showing that we're asking questions like, you know, we're not just saying are you pro-life or pro-choice, we're asking questions like, should abortion always be legal? Should it be illegal with exceptions? Should it be illegal with no exceptions? So when you see polls that show those separate questions, the percentages of pro-life women increases
so when you greatly. Get when you get specific mm-hmm. with the issues of what swirl around the whole issue of pro-life,
right.
then you're finding more pro-life women.
Yeah, because women are getting more educated now. I mean, just in technology, it seems what we're getting very excited about is the technology now, it seems, is going to step on the feet of all these pro-abortion people, because now we can actually see a baby in utero that is a baby. So you're looking at commercials that show the baby in utero, and a woman can't deny that that's a baby, or anybody that sees that. So now we have technology that's showing us, well, this is a baby. So all around the education of understanding, the other side, what they're using, the arguments they're using aren't as strong anymore. So a lot more women are tending to look towards recognizing that and considering themselves more pro-life than pro-choice or pro-abortion.
Is that how you account for the fact that the numbers seem to be trending more pro-life among women?
Yeah, and also the pro-life movement is much more energized than the pro-choice movement. You know, people my age and my generation don't relate to the fact that, or even if it, you know, such the fact was that women were getting back alley abortions, we know that's never going to happen. We don't relate to that. So that argument is old. So what's behind the pro-life movement is much more strong now than the pro-choice movement. The word choice is used everywhere now. So the pro-choice word is not as catchy anymore for this organization. So there's just a lot of things going on in general mainstream America that is on the side of pro-life, let's just say.
What about voting? Do women vote more pro-life than they used to?
Well, you know, we did a voter identification program actually in this election cycle, and we focused on it's not single issue is really important to get people to vote, obviously, but we did an extensive program in three states where we asked specific, you know, we tried to get women out who don't normally vote in off-election years, which is the problem there. It's not necessarily if the women go to vote for abortion or not. It's getting people to vote, period, and then finding the people whose issues would support a pro-life person running for Congress, say. And what we did was we identified women who don't normally vote in these elections. We got them to get excited about a specific legislative thing that's going on. We got them to address unborn victims of violence and send a letter to their congressman. And once they got passionate about doing that, they would go out to vote, and they would vote pro-life. So it's not so much about how many women are going to vote for abortion. It's about getting or vote for pro-life congressmen. It's about getting these women to vote. That's the thing about winning at the polls, is getting the women to vote. So we know for sure in Jim Talent's race, they did an exit poll, and 80% of the people who voted on the abortion issue. So some of the data is showing that people are going because they're more, the pro-life movement is stronger, so people are more likely to go vote because they're pro-life, and they want to make sure they get pro-life congressmen in, you know, to pass legislation that's going to protect the unborn. But the bottom line is putting money into voter identification programs to educate these people that their vote counts and to get them to vote. So we're lacking on the voting side, but we're definitely more energized than the other side.
Does your polling data give you any indication of the demographic that's shifting the quickest? I have heard that they're of college-age women, entering freshmen are often polling more pro-life than pro-choice, but when they graduate, the same women are polling more pro-choice than pro-life. Is there a shift in age or socioeconomic status, anything like that?
Well, you know, I'm not familiar with it. I have a package of polls in front of me, but I certainly don't have time to look through it. We're just focusing on that information right now because we're just really focusing in on voter identification because it worked so well this year. We did increase the number of pro-life congresswomen from 7 to 12 this year. So we had astronomical support for that. That's a huge, I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but we increased the pro-life women by 71% in Congress. So our goal is, you know, obviously to focus on getting more legislators that are pro-life women because, you know, obviously women supporting pro-life is much more strong than a man. And so, you know, I don't necessarily know about the specific polls offhand, but, you know, our focus is obviously focusing in on getting the women voted in. So
now, I have observed that when we're talking to women about the issue of abortion, it's often better, and we kind of go by this rule here by the guests we schedule, to have a woman talk to women. Is that your experience too?
Well, that's our organization is named Susan B. Anthony, for Susan B. Anthony, because she was pro-life and she considered abortion child murder. So we wanted a woman to stand behind a woman's organization, obviously, because it's, you know, women understand what women go through. And a lot of times people don't understand that abortion hurts women. You know, and we're working with a lot of groups to get the women's voice. The woman needs to speak out against abortion in the sense that it is abusive to a woman's body. Not only does it kill a child, but women deal with the psychological effects of abortion. And so when you have a woman portray that message, it's less threatening to someone who doesn't know yet.
Christina Mueller, thank you so much for being our guest on Issues Etc.
Thank you.
When we come back from this break, I'll tell you how you can contact the Susan B. Anthony List, their website, and get some information there as well. We'll also have open lines for your questions and your comments. Stay with us.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When the disciples asked Jesus to teach them to pray, Jesus gave them the Lord's Prayer. Is spontaneous prayer more spiritual than the Lord's Prayer? Is the Lord's Prayer the perfect prayer? If you're asking these questions, you'll find answers in a new book called To All Eternity, The Essential Teachings of Christianity. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January. You can order To All Eternity online. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, click on the What's New section, and you'll find a link to Concordia Publishing House. Or you can call Concordia Publishing House Monday through Friday during regular business hours at 1-800-325-3040. Order our Issues Etc. Book of the Month, To All Eternity, The Essential Teachings of Christianity, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer.
It was quite a turnout for the March for Life rally in Washington, D.C. yesterday. Organizers estimate there were close to 100,000 people gathered on the Mall to mark the 30th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court decision that made abortion legal. Behind the sea of people are stories of parents trying to pass on the message of life to the next generation. David Brody reports.
One of the more encouraging signs at the rally is the number of parents who have made a point of it to take their children with them. Jody Brock brought her 6-year-old daughter.
We just think it makes such an impact to bring her here while she's still 6 years old so she can really get it into her heart and soul.
And little Erica knows abortion is wrong.
Why is it bad, do you think?
Because they kill babies.
A family that truly knows the value of life is the Ramanack family. They used to be infertile, but after much prayer, God ended up blessing them with 7 children. They've been coming with them for years. Mom Teresa says sometimes when something is so important, you have to take a stand.
We have to make our sacrifices, and we have to, standing in 12 degree weather is our sacrifice right now, but it's worth making all the sacrifices, and it's worth standing here, and it's worth making a stand for the children.
It seems like they've taught their daughters well. Listen to Monica, who's 11.
Well, it's kind of sort of like that we shouldn't really be aborting babies if they just didn't really do anything to hurt us.
And 12-year-old Mary has her opinions, too.
Well, I think it's important because abortion really is just plain old cold-blooded murder. Wow. The sooner abortion is over, the better it is for the whole nation, the continent, the world.
Sometimes children say it better than anybody else. For Family News and Focus, I'm David Brody in Washington.
Organizers of the march say they're encouraged because in recent years they've seen a growing number of teens attending the event. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
AM 850 KFUO salutes our day sponsor on this Thursday, January 23rd, 2003, Elmer Liefer. Today's day sponsor has made a contribution to AM 850 KFUO in memory of Norma Liefer. Once again, we say thank you to Elmer Liefer of Redbud, today's AM 850 KFUO day sponsor.
What are the essential teachings of Christianity? Find out with the new book, To All Eternity, published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. To All Eternity is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, 1-800-325-3040. You can find out more about this book on the internet, issuesetc.org. Click What's New. To All Eternity, the Essential Teachings of Christianity, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January.
Sarah, do women deserve better than abortion?
Absolutely. And I guess I'd like to add that no woman deserves an abortion. Every woman deserves better. And, you know, this is America, and women are capable. And I think that once this discussion starts taking place across America, instead of us arguing about what is the worst thing that one could do to oneself, which is to have an abortion, we're going to start elevating the discussion, say, what is the best we can do in America for women? And don't they deserve better than an abortion? The answer is yes.
Sarah Foster of Feminists for Life, just part of what you'll hear tomorrow from 4 to 5 here on Issues Etc., as we discuss with many guests, some heavy hitters, the 30th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Folks, we're doing something new here in January and following in the months of 2003 on Issues Etc. We now have an Issues Etc. Book of the Month. I read a lot of books, and I have opportunity to basically toss a lot of books away, too. Christian publishing is not necessarily the best place for a Christian to do his reading, but when you come across books that are genuinely Christ-centered, cross-centered, sound theology, you want to recommend them, and our way of doing that is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. This month, January, the Book of the Month is To All Eternity, the Essential Teachings of Christianity. It follows the outline of these 6 essential teachings, the Ten Commandments, the Creed, the Lord's Prayer, baptism, absolution, and the Lord's Supper, and explains them in a thoroughly accessible and scriptural way. If you'd like to get our Issues Etc. Book of the Month To All Eternity, you can call Concordia Publishing House in the next 20 minutes at 1-800-325-3040. That's 1-800-325-3040. You can also, anytime, day or night, order the book online by going to our Issues Etc. website, issuesetc.org. under the website's section of What's New. You're going to find a link to Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number again, call anytime during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. When you call, ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, To All Eternity, The Essential Teachings of Christianity. We finished a conversation there with Christina Mueller of the Susan B. Anthony List, and I promised I would let you know how you could get a hold of Susan B. Anthony List on the web. It's sba-list.org, sba-list.org. And as she mentioned, if you listen during the regular program day of AM 850 KFUO, you will hear the spots that are produced by the Susan B. Anthony List and their website address repeated there as well. It's open lines for the remainder of the program. Your questions, your comments, your reaction in just a minute after we hear from President George W. Bush. Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Maybe you were one of the many thousands, tens of thousands, who went to the mall in Washington yesterday, stood there in protest of Roe v. Wade, demonstrating for life. Maybe you got to hear President George W. Bush. If you weren't, if you missed it on the news, we're going to play a little bit of what the president had to say here in just a second. I remind you, our phone number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. First of all, President Bush told pro-life demonstrators yesterday that the right to life is in the Declaration of Independence.
And this self-evident truth calls us to value and to protect the lives of innocent children waiting to be born.
That's President George W. Bush. Self-evident truth. You remember learning that in grade school? We hold these truths to be self-evident. In other words, one does not need to offer evidence for these truths. These are something that we believe to be so foundational that they can't be questioned and should not be questioned. You see, that in a sense, the Declaration of Independence is also a moral document. Not a religious document, a moral document, in that it says the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are questions that we will not answer in any other way than in the affirmative. They are rights which we will not question. They are self-evident truths. Let's hear more from President George W. Bush. Here he is.
We offer compassionate alternatives to abortion by promoting adoption and extending state health care coverage for unborn children. My hope is that the United States Congress will pass a bill this year banning partial birth abortion.
Now that is everyone's hope, and we're hearing this again and again. If you listen tomorrow on Issues Etc., you will hear both Senator Brownback and I believe also Senator Santorum mention, and maybe others of our guests also mention, the fact that one of the best bills that's there to be passed, ready to go this year, is the total ban on partial birth abortion. That's the president's hope as well. He also mentioned something we talked about before on Issues Etc., and that is state health care for unborn children. Remember what the pro-choice forces did when that was passed.
Partial birth abortion is an abhorrent procedure that offends human dignity. I also urge the Congress to ban all human cloning. We must not create life to destroy life. Human beings are not research material to be used in a cruel and reckless experiment.
Now, this was a surprise to me, and I'll be honest with you. It did surprise me to hear the president say, ban all human cloning. Not because I doubt his convictions in this, but because it probably won't turn out that way, given the makeup of the Senate. And yet he's courageous enough to call for it, and not just a ban on, remember, he didn't, this is not an equivocating statement. I would not have been terribly surprised to hear him say a ban on reproductive cloning, because that would have gotten cheers from everyone. But he said a ban on all human cloning. What's your reaction? I'm generally encouraged to hear our president not only address the pro-lifers there in Washington, but the way he addressed them. What's your reaction to the president's stance here and his address yesterday to the pro-lifers in Washington? Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. In addition to that, if you'd like to discuss, even in a general sense, or something specific about the 30th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, You can give us a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I've been thinking long and hard about this in the last 2 days, and it hasn't been a pleasant experience. You can hardly not think about it, for heaven's sakes. It's almost all that's been on the news. It's hard not to think about it. It is hard to think about it. I have to admit to some frustration that after 30 years, we're still going around and around the same tree. I have to admit some shame that for a lot of years, I simply sat idly by, kind of conveniently pro-life. Well, I'm against this stuff, but not really doing anything about it, not really devoting any thought or any wasting any wind on it. What are your thoughts after 30 years of decriminalized abortion here in America? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. What do you think the effect has been in our culture, in our nation, and in our church? We have open lines for the next 80 minutes. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. One of the sources of frustration, I must admit, are the op-ed pages of the papers. It was a rare privilege to be able to talk with an op-ed writer last week. Maybe it was earlier this week. Talking about 30 years of Roe v. Wade and what it has done, whether the promises have been kept, and how much damage has been done to us all, not only to the babies and to the women. And then things go back to normal. Ellen Goodman writes in today's St. Louis Post-Dispatch, anti-abortion right seems to hold the reins of nation's foreign policy. Before I read Ellen Goodman, this is one of the things, I got to admit, that just chafes me to no end. It was mentioned by Rod Dreher in a previous conversation today, and that is the degree to which pro-choice people act as though the sky is always falling. They have had their way for 30 years. There have been no significant legislative incursions on Roe, period. If there is a ban on partial birth abortion, it will be the first significant national legislative incursion on Roe in 30 years. And yet, if you were to listen to Kate Michaelman, anyone else who is prominent in the pro-choice movement, you would think that Roe had never been passed. You would think they're still trying to get the thing through. You would think that there is such a danger for a woman who wants an abortion that somehow her right is going to be taken away, that it might even happen tomorrow or today if we're not careful. There is a Supreme Court sitting today that couldn't overturn Roe v. Wade if you spotted them a couple justices. There's speculation about Chief Justice William Rehnquist stepping down at the end of this term of the court. And what is everyone worried about? That the difference of one justice may bring about the overturning of Roe v. Wade. I don't think one justice is going to make a difference. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think one justice will make a difference. And when everything is going their way in the United States, they still gripe about what's happening overseas. The fact that we won't send money to promote abortion in other nations gets under their skin. Ellen Goodman is one of them. She writes, there was a moment last month when the Bush administration overturned Roe v. Wade. Did you hear about this, folks? She goes on. You may not have noticed it because it happened in Bangkok. I was not aware, Ellen, that U.S. Supreme Court decisions extended to other sovereign nations. It happened in Bangkok, she wrote, out of sight and out of the media mind. Our government went there to try to deep six a U.N. agreement on family planning after one of our delegates promoted abstinence-only education, after another warned of the risks of condoms, after a third shared her personal story using the rhythm method. Assistant Secretary of State Gene Dewey took the podium. He said to the assembled, quote, the United States supports the sanctity of life from conception to natural death. The United States? Had he confused the nation with a right to life organization? Had he forgotten that abortion is legal in this country, protected by the Constitution? I love this. I love this, folks. I love to watch people paint themselves into a corner, and that is precisely what Ellen Goodman is doing in this op-ed piece. She is putting herself in the position of arguing against the statement that the United States supports the sanctity of life from conception to natural death. Haven't we been told for years and years and years, weren't we told 2 days ago by the Democratic presidential candidates, that their favorable position toward abortion and abortion rights in no way diminishes their view of the sanctity of life? Didn't Joseph Lieberman tell us that he was pro-family, pro-woman, pro-everything, and pro-choice? And yet Ellen Goodman, in a moment of remarkable candor, is really irritated that the United States is typified, is described as a nation that respects the sanctity of life from conception to death. She can't stand it. Her argument against that? Abortion is legal here, and she has tipped her hand and the hand of the whole pro-choice community by saying this. There is no way that someone can be for abortion or abortion rights and still say, I am all for the sanctity of life. And Ellen Goodman has admitted it. I don't know if she knows she admitted it. You would think her editor would have caught this one. She goes on, I wonder if the Bangkok drama was an out-of-town preview for a play opening soon in our nation's capital. Wednesday is the 30th anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision legalizing abortion. I'm usually wary of pro-choice alarmists whose message, the sky is falling and falling, plays on an endless loop. She's one of them, for heaven's sakes. I don't know why she's wary of that. She starts out her column by saying that Roe v. Wade was overturned by the president. But for the first time since Roe, the White House and both houses of Congress are securely in Republican hands, and all those hands are ready to chip away at reproductive rights, one law, one rule, one case at a time. Wrong, Ellen. Wrong. Even though they are firmly in Republican hands, the White House and both houses of Congress, there are a lot of Republican hands there who are pushing as hard as they can to prop up Roe v. Wade. That's the sad truth. She continues, Congress will begin, no doubt, by voting to outlaw the procedure that is heatedly, if wrongly, called partial birth abortion. Let's hope so. Then it'll take up a law against bringing minors across state lines to avoid parental notification. Then more laws giving the fetus rights that equal or surpass those of women, and more laws allowing hospitals to stop providing abortions without risking federal funds. Sounds like the sky is falling to me, Ellen. This mystifies me. How in the world, even if you're pro-choice in some theoretical sense, how twisted do you have to be? I'm sorry, how twisted does your moral sense have to be to say that it should be legal for people to bring minor girls across state lines to have anything done to them without their parents' consent or notification? The last time I checked, that was kidnapping. Oh, but the girl wants the abortion. That makes it different. If your daughter wanted to buy, what, a dress. This is perhaps a bad analogy since we live on the state line here, folks. But if your daughter wanted to get a tattoo, that's a good one. Gary says a tattoo. And you had said, tattoos will not be abided by in this house. And she says, I don't care what my parents think. Without your knowledge and without your consent, if her boyfriend, your clergyman, someone else, took your daughter across state lines to get a tattoo, how would you react as a parent? Ellen Goodman seems to think that a law making it illegal to take your child, your daughter, across a state line to have an abortion is somehow an abomination. I think one of those self-evident truths of the Declaration of Independence should also have been, you can't take my kid across state lines to do anything with them without my consent or permission, much less an abortion. But we'll round off here with what she has to say at the end of her op-ed piece. So the other side of this anniversary story is that me now includes an estimated 30 million women who have had more than 39 million abortions since Roe. I'm sorry, I skipped a paragraph. That didn't make any sense, did it? Let me pick up where I left off. Is the proper gift for this Roe anniversary a warning bell? 30 years is a long time for an entire new generation to take for granted the right to decide. Young women don't remember when women had to cross state lines or find doctors or a friend of a friend. For this generation, says one pollster, a coat hanger is just a coat hanger. By the way, it was 30 years ago, too. The old coat hanger myth is a myth. But when did the truth ever get in the way? Since 1995, there have been 335 state laws restricting a woman's right to choose. These laws have affected mostly the poor, young, rural women, women as far off as far off the political radar screen as Bangkok. But what happens in the presence of a threat to the right itself? 30 years of opinion polls have shown that Americans consistently support legal abortion for three reasons: rape, incest, and me. By the way, if you want to look at the percentages, folks, rape and incest are a very, very small percentage of the actual abortions that are being performed. The me reason for abortion is the rest. No matter how it is couched, woman's health, no matter what, it is me. We are talking about abortions of convenience. And I know that sounds terrible to impugn all the women who've had abortions. And they've done it with tears in their eyes and things like that, but it's sad to say it has still been purely for convenience. I'll go to the phones here in just a second. Please be patient. So the other side of the anniversary is that the me now includes an estimated 30 million women who have had more than 39 million abortions since Roe. That's 30 million different stories with emotions ranging from anxiety to relief. I don't care if you got a story. Killing your baby is killing your baby. Behind every choice there's a story is the new Planned Parenthood motto. Behind every choice there's a story. I don't care what your story is. You still can't kill your baby. There's no story you can tell me that's good enough to justify killing your baby. It may be sad, it may be a tearjerker, it may be tragic, it may be the worst story I've ever heard. The answer to your story is not to terminate the life of your unborn child. She finishes, until now the politics have been easy. President George W. Bush has been able to talk about a culture of life, but he has also carefully, repeatedly avoided saying that he wanted to overturn Roe. He has curried favor with the right while trying not to frighten the suburban middle. His United States has exported the most draconian family planning ideas. His United States has allowed the anti-abortion, anti-sex education, anti-birth control contingent to rule our foreign policy. Now on Roe's 30th anniversary, push is coming to shove. Foreign policy is coming home. 30 years, 30 million. This time we'll be watching. Oh. Kurt's calling from his car, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. It hurts to think about it, it hurts to read that stuff, but there it is. That's the ugly truth. Kurt, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Pastor Todd, we have two sacraments in the church. We have one national sacrament, and it's become abortion. That's our national sacrament. It is the most protected act in the United States. And, I mean, we can just go down the list. You brought up the tattoo example of how that's regulated. Restaurants are regulated. Abortion clinics are not regulated for cleanliness. You can stand in front of a movie theater and yell how bad the movie is, but if you stand in front of an abortion clinic and yell, you're subject to the federal FACE legislation. But the fact is that, and it is true, it is our national sacrament, and the fact is that we as a nation have, there are many, and I thank you for continuing to put this in our face. I mean, we're all tired of this. It's not something we want to think about.
I'm tired of it, Kurt, believe me. 30 years tired of it. Go ahead.
But it's gruesome. It's not something we want to think about. But the fact is, is that if this nation, if we as a people, we are a republic, we could change this. We could have more people. And the other day I had a luncheon appointment during the time when I probably should have been out in front of the Granite City Abortion Clinic. But we, as a church and as a nation, it's just terrible that we continue to let this. Yes, we face a Supreme Court. We face an elite that is worships this sacrament. But still, we just need to keep working and repenting from this. Thank you.
Kurt, thank you very much for the call. I think he's right. I think it is, I don't know who it was, but it seems to me, if memory serves, it was Rush Limbaugh at one point who called abortion the feminist sacrament, the sacrament of feminists. It's their holy deed. I think that it's even more than that. That's kind of a... That's coming close, and I thank Kurt very much for making the points he did. I think there's something more at work here. And I was convinced of this about 10 years ago when I heard Dr. Lewis Brighton address a group of pastors on marriage and the family. And I heard him say something I had never heard anyone say. And he was talking about the Holy Family and marriage and the family. And he started talking about abortion. And he said, do you know... How, I'm paraphrasing, of course. Do you know how we can explain 40 million abortions? Do you know how we can explain 4,000 abortions a day? He says there is an explanation, a spiritual explanation. It has to do with what it is Satan is bent upon doing in the human race. He said very briefly, and again, I can never say it as eloquently as he had said it. Satan wanted to kill Adam and Eve, the crown of God's creation. Out of jealousy, who knows, out of hatred for God. But what he wanted to kill more than who he wanted to kill more than anything was that seed that was promised by God to Adam and Eve after they fell into sin, Jesus Christ. Just look at it. The babies in Bethlehem who died, because Herod was bent upon destroying this baby. Who was behind this? Satan could not destroy the Christ child, so he's going after every other child in human history. Now, that may sound simplistic to you. It might sound overly metaphysical to you, but I think it's true. When we come back from this break, it's more Open Lines. We'll be talking about this and your reaction to 30 years of Roe v. Wade. A few other things to share as well. Stay with us.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.